Chapter 2, The Good Heart. When the great Buddhist teacher Atisha was living in Tibet, many people used to come to see him. Whenever Atisha met anyone, he would inquire, "Do you have a good heart?" Usually when we meet someone, we ask, "How are you?" But Atisha asked a more profound question. He recognized that anyone who has a kind heart is a good person. When Atisha advised anyone, he would say, "Try to cultivate a good heart." Whether he commits positive or negative actions depends upon the nature of our heart or mind. A bad or negative mind will lead us to commit negative actions, and equally a good or wholesome mind will lead us to perform positive action. The result of negative actions will be many problems. The result of good actions will be happiness. Through the force of having a good heart, we will obtain temporary happiness. The ultimate happiness of enlightenment is also achieved through the force of the good heart. Even happiness in our family relationships depends upon our having a good heart. A family's love and compassion is based on the good hearts of its members. For example, for a couple, having a good relationship depends upon their having good hearts. If the hearts of both the husband and wife are negative, suffering will result. Thus, in order to attain happiness from insignificant temporary happiness to the ultimate happiness of Buddhahood, we must try to develop a good heart. We should carefully investigate how to generate a good heart. First of all, we must be able to distinguish between good and bad states of mind. Then we should try to eliminate our negative states of mind and increase our positive ones. Any kind of mind which disturbs our inner peace is called a negative or bad mind. Negative thoughts such as resentment, jealousy, anger, greed, wishing to harm others, holding wrong views and bad attitudes, wrong discernment, and faithlessness disturb our mind and cause us problems. These thoughts destroy our happiness and cause us misery. It is easy to see how a negative mind causes one to experience suffering. For instance, a person may have a very positive mind, but then develops anger. After having a calm mind, if anger suddenly arises, that person no longer has a happy or peaceful mind. No matter how much delicious food is served to such an angry person, he cannot enjoy it. The angry mind, in effect, steals one's happiness and peace. Everyone who develops anger or hatred experiences unhappiness. The result of anger is the creation of problems. Bad actions, such as quarreling, fighting, and killing, are caused by anger. Because of these negative actions, such sufferings are experienced. A jealous or envious mind also creates problems. The more we have a jealous mind, the more we are unhappy and cannot find any peace. Likewise, the more attachment we have, the more problems arise because of the attachment. A thief, for example, may be sent to prison for the rest of his life because of his attachment. He first became attached to someone else's possessions and then, motivated by attachment, stole and perhaps killed in order to obtain them. The result of his attachment is imprisonment and unbearable suffering. Also, in terms of family and personal relationships, intense attachment can lead to problems such as over-possessiveness. Another example of disadvantages of a strong desire is the attachment which fish have to food. Fishermen put a small piece of food on top of a hook. When fish see or smell the food, they bite the hook. As a result, they die. Some wild animals are attached to beautiful sounds. Hunters use to play the mouth organ or flute to make animals approach them. Then the hunters would kill the animals. According to Vasu Bandhu, some living beings die from attachment to visual form or sound, taste, smell, or touch. But human beings have strong attachment to all these five sense objects. All these examples demonstrate the negative mind of attachment is the source of many problems. Although we all have negative minds such as attachment, as human beings, we have the precious opportunity to practice methods to stop negative minds from arising and to prevent the resultant suffering. What then constitutes good or positive mind? Good minds include beneficial intentions towards others, compassion, loving, kindness, generosity, moral discipline, tolerance, patience, and a joyful desire to practice Dharma. A mind which wishes to gain concentration, a mind which wishes to realize emptiness or to gain the renunciation of samsara, and a mind which wishes to attain enlightenment for the sake of all sentient beings are all positive minds. These thoughts are classified as good thoughts because they give happiness to oneself and also produce happiness for others. These positive minds have great power to solve or reduce our problem. The more we cultivate a good heart, the fewer will be our negative thoughts. Our difficulties will also become fewer. The more we develop a good heart, the greater will be our happiness. Sometimes it is inspiring to consider the lives of realized yogis of the past. These yogis develop happiness through the force of the good heart by training their minds. Yogis achieved high mental development. When the yogis encountered adverse circumstances, they transformed these into the spiritual path. Unlike worldly people who experience suffering, when they meet difficulties, the ancient yogis spent their lives from joy to joy. As a great Buddhist yogi, Santidevi said, "Never become discouraged because I am traveling the path to enlightenment, which leads from joy to joy." If we try to develop a good heart, we will naturally find some inner peace. Without cultivating a good heart, we will never find pure peace. If we do not have internal peace, even world peace cannot bring peace to our own mind. It is our duty to find our own internal mental peace. Pure happiness and development of mental peace cannot be achieved solely by concentrating on material things. In order to obtain or achieve material rewards, we must exert great effort. While we are exerting this effort, we experience more suffering than happiness. And after achieving material goals, we find that they cannot satisfy our inner need. Therefore, we need spiritual or Dharma practices. Especially during a degenerate age, when there is much fighting and many dangers, we need to devote a large amount of energy to Dharma practice. But even during this degenerate time, we are fortunate in having the opportunity to make our mind happy by training in Dharma. Transforming negative mind. At first, it is very difficult to transform a negative mind into a positive one. For instance, if someone has an angry mind, it is impossible to transform this angry mind into love suddenly. Any negative mind which develops cannot immediately be transformed into a wholesome mind. Just as black woolen cloth, very difficult to dye yellow without first removing the black color. We must destroy or overcome a negative mind before a positive mind can arise. Thus, if negative thoughts arise, we should first of all try to overcome them. Then we should try to transform our thoughts into positive or beneficial ones. There are two methods of transforming negative thoughts into positive thoughts. The first method is to overcome negative conceptual thoughts. The second method is actually to try to develop a good heart. Initially, we should put great effort into abandoning negative thoughts. If we practice Dharma, it is not very hard to destroy negative conceptual thoughts, including anger or hatred. These thoughts can fairly easily be destroyed temporarily, but it is very hard to uproot and eliminate negative conceptual thoughts completely. Until we gain an intuitive realization of emptiness, it is not possible to destroy the root of negative thoughts. But there are many ways to overcome negative conceptual thoughts temporarily. Although no one wishes to experience an unhappy mind, unhappy and upset states of mind frequently arise. Sometimes an unhappy mind arises from attachment, anger, jealousy, miserliness, or greed. Miserliness, for instance, leads to problems which cause unhappiness. If someone spends a great deal of money on expensive food and then later feels regret that his money is gone, this creates an unhappy state of mind. If it was not the miserliness, unhappiness would not have arisen. Sometimes by thinking of future rebirths, an individual can become upset. Through worrying that his or her future life will be difficult or impoverished, unhappiness develops. Owing to the attachment to this present life, thinking that it is very important and precious, mental distress occurs. As long as a person thinks only of himself, of his own welfare, and his present selfish concerns, his inner unhappiness will never end. It is necessary to achieve the intuitive realizations of emptiness in order to destroy completely all of one's negative conceptual thoughts. but there are many methods to solve or reduce problems temporarily. First, we should know that an unhappy mind does not arise automatically. It depends upon causes. Each negative thought has a different set of causes. Negative conceptual thoughts have two types of causes, which arise simultaneously. One type of cause of a negative thought is object of that thought. The second type of cause is our internal, impure, mounting energy winds, prana. The energy winds flow through our body in channels, and the functioning of our mind depends upon these winds. Energy winds are responsible for our memory and our conceptual thoughts. In most of the tantric texts, it is stated that we develop negative thoughts because of impure energy winds. Although we now develop many negative thoughts, these thoughts are not permanent. The negative conceptualizations like anger are only temporary, caused by impure energy winds and meeting an external object of anger. Such illusions are not dissolved into our root mind, the very subtle mind which continues from life to life. If we do not have any impure energy winds, thus meeting an external object cannot cause anger to develop. Buddhas, for example, never develop anger. They do encounter external objects, but they do not have internal pure impure energy winds. When Shakyamuni Buddha was alive, Devadatta, evil-minded person, constantly tried to harm him, but Buddha, free from impure energy winds, never developed any anger toward Devadatta. On the other hand, if we do not meet an object of anger, even though we do possess internal impure energy winds, anger will not arise. From this we can see that there are two methods to use to overcome an angry mind. One method is to try to stop the impure energy winds from arising. The other is to try to forget the object of anger. The same two methods are useful for overcoming other negative thoughts. To prevent attachment, we should try to stop arising of impure energy winds, and then try to forget the object of our attachment. If we wish to conquer self-grasping, we should meditate on stopping the development of impure energy winds, and then meditate in order to forget the object of our self-grasping. Thus we have two meditations to do. First, to stop impure energy winds from arising. Second, to forget the object of our negative thoughts. These two meditations solve our problems temporarily, but not finally or ultimately. Then we complete these two meditations. It is still possible for our negative thoughts to arise again. If this happens, we should repeat the same two meditations. Secret mantra or tantra contains methods through which we can stop impure energy winds from arising. Most of our impure energy winds flow through our left or right channel. Our body has many channels, but there are three principal ones: the central, right, and left channels. The most important is the central channel. At the moment, energy winds cannot flow through our central channel. They flow through our right and left channels instead. But the energy winds flow in our right and left channels are impure or defiled energy winds, which cause delusions or negative conceptions to develop. Owing to this, we should practice the meditation explained below in order to prevent the energy winds from flowing in our right and left channels and causing deluded minds to arise. Meditation on purifying defiled energy wind. Through the 9 breath or 9 round purification practice, we should try to expel our defiled energy winds. The defiled energy winds, which help to develop strong delusions, flow principally in the right channel. Therefore, we should try to obstruct the right channel. We should begin by placing the tip of our left thumb against the base of our left ring finger, and then make a fist by closing our four fingers over the thumb. With this left fist, we should press on the right side of our ribcage so that our fist rests at the level of the elbow, in line with the armpit. Next, we should make a similar fist with our right hand, but with the index finger extended, with the back or nail side, the extended right index finger, we press the left nostril closed. We then inhale smoothly through our right nostril, visualizing that all the inspiring strength of the Buddha and Bodhisattvas enter into us through the right nostril in the form of radiant white light. We should then feel that the Buddha's and Bodhisattva's blessings have blessed our mind. Our inhalation should be full, deep breath, and we should hold this breath for as long as possible. To exhale, we move our right inner finger over to our right nostril, pressing it closed with the right of the index finger. Then we should exhale all the air gently in three equal successive breaths through the left nostril. As we exhale, we should visualize that all impure energy winds, particularly those from the left side of our body, are expelled in the form of black light. With our right index finger still holding our right nostril closed, we now inhale through our left nostril slowly, smoothly, and deeply, visualizing that all the inspiring strength of the Buddhas and Bodhisattva streams into us in the form of radiant white light. Again, we think that the Buddhas and Bodhisattva's blessings have blessed our mind. We should remain with this experience, holding our breath until we become uncomfortable. In order to exhale, we transfer our right index finger again to the left nostril. We exhale fully all impure energy winds in the form of black light in three equal breaths from our right nostril. This purifies our impure energy winds, especially those from the right side of our body. The last three rounds are done through both nostrils simultaneously. Our hands cannot be placed in the meditation position, palms upward, right hand resting on the left hand and thumbs touching. The hands are placed in this position close to our body, just below the navel. We inhale smoothly through both nostrils with the same visualization of white light as before, then exhale in three equal breaths which we visualize in the form of black light. After we inhale, we should think that the Buddha's and Bodhisattva's blessing entered our mind, making it very calm. As we exhale, we should think that from our left and right channel and from all subsidiary channel, the impure energy winds depart. When the final ninth exhalation has been completed, we should think that all the energy winds in our body have been purified. Our body feels very flexible and comfortable. After finishing the nine rounds of purifying defiled energy winds, which can be done several times in succession, we may begin whatever is to be our main mediator for that session. For example, if we are interested in doing breath meditation, we should turn our concentration to the subtle sensation inside our nostrils. As we inhale and exhale normally, there is a subtle sensation inside our nose. We should meditate on that sensation single-pointedly as a general sensation inside our nose, without locating it at any one place. The nine-round meditation is very helpful in preventing negative thoughts by purifying impure energy wind. If we do this practice every day, it will be beneficial. At the moment, we are unused to this practice, and at first, we may not get quick results from it. But by becoming accustomed to this meditation, it becomes very useful in overcoming our negative thoughts. This meditation also helps to overcome anxiety and other types of unhappy minds. This entire practice can be very beneficial, but this result depends on the way in which it is practiced. For instance, if someone is given a car but does not know how to drive it, that car will be useless even if it's in good working order. The same is true for this meditation. Although the meditation can be very helpful, if we do not perform it properly and conscientiously, it cannot help us. But if we do this nine-round meditation every day, it helps to calm our mind. Then we have a great opportunity to develop positive minds such as love, compassion, and bodhicitta. Otherwise, it is very difficult to develop positive minds while we still have negative conception. Forgetting the object of negative thought. The second meditation for overcoming negative minds is meditation to forget the object of our negative thoughts. In general, any wholesome meditation that we perform helps us to forget the object of negative thoughts. If, for instance, someone has a strong attachment to wealth, visualizing and meditating on Buddha's form will help him or her forget the object of attachment. Through developing a strong concentration on Buddha's form, the object of attachment will naturally be forgotten. Similarly, if we have strong anger, visualizing Buddha helps us to forget the object. If this meditation becomes very successful, our anger will be pacified. At present, our mind cannot focus on two different objects simultaneously. We cannot concentrate both on the object of our anger and the object of our wholesome meditation. If we concentrate strongly on one, then naturally we forget the other. Therefore, if we have a very good meditation, any object of our negative thoughts will be forgotten. The breathing meditation outlined earlier will also help us to forget the object of our delusion. If we forget the object, then our negative mind, such as anger, will be reduced. Our mind will become peaceful. Thus, we can use any positive meditation on Buddha, on love, on emptiness, and so forth, to forget the object of our negative thoughts. Through the force of these two types of meditation, purifying our internal energy winds and forgetting the object of delusion, we can destroy all of our negative thoughts. After eliminating our negative thoughts, we should try to cultivate a positive mind. It is as if we have taken out the black color from the woolen cloth, and now it is easy to dye it yellow. Now that we have destroyed our negative conceptions, it is easy to achieve realizations such as compassion and bodhicitta, the three principal aspects of the path. In the Buddhist teachings, there are three main spiritual paths: renunciation, bodhicitta, for the altruistic mind aspiring to attain enlightenment for the benefit of others, and the correct view of emptiness. Without depending on these three principal aspects of the path to enlightenment, it is impossible to reach Buddhahood. Within the three principal aspects, we should first try to achieve renunciation. Renunciation here does not mean giving up our family, friends, and so forth. It means wishing to escape from cyclic existence, the uncontrolled cycle of birth, death, and rebirth. If we consider the fear, suffering, and danger which we have experienced up to now, and also consider the fear, suffering, and danger which we will definitely experience in the future, we will see that there is no place in samsara or cyclic existence where these problems do not exist. For example, no one wishes to experience old age, but it arises naturally. Illness, death, and other miseries also arise naturally, so that we have no choice but to face them. If we develop the continuous and spontaneous wish to escape from cyclic existence, this is called renunciation. Human beings have a great opportunity to achieve the mind of renunciation. Renunciation is a wholesome mind particular to human beings. No animal, for example, is capable of wishing to escape from cyclic existence. Up to now, we have seen and experienced samsaric fears and sufferings, but we have not developed the wish to escape from them. This is because we have not met the instructors who can guide us to nirvana or liberation. If there were no chance to escape from samsara, it would be pointless to cultivate renunciation and the desire for liberation. But it is possible to escape from samsara, and there are many methods for accomplishing this. Many people feel that cyclic existence is like a paradise, and they plan to remain in samsara for a long time. Many people develop strong attachment to cyclic existence. The main object of concentration is samsara. Pure Dharma practitioners, however, see samsara as a prison and develop a strong desire to escape from it. They cultivate the precious thoughts of renunciation. Renunciation may be hard to develop right now. First of all, we have to see the faults of cyclic existence. The reason that Buddhist teachings explain the prevalence of suffering is to enable us to realize renunciation. Otherwise, it would not be necessary to meditate upon suffering. If we have great wisdom, it may seem as though we don't need to read books in order to understand suffering, and neither do we need to receive instruction on misery or dissatisfaction. We experience suffering ourselves. We also see that others are experiencing suffering. We know that the future will bring many experiences of suffering for ourselves and others. Thus, the great Tibetan yogi Melarapa said, "I don't need these black letters to read. I perceive all appearances as Dharma teachings. All appearances teach me the faults of cyclic existence. All appearances teach me death awareness and profound views of emptiness." If we are very skillful like Melarapa, whatever we experience teach us Dharma. It may be difficult for us to understand this. We have to think, meditate, and improve our mind. If we do this, we have great prospects for reaching spiritual realization. Then we will derive great meaning from our human existence, from our precious human rebirth. Should we not practice Dharma, we will one day be faced with our own death and find that our life has been meaningless. We will have wasted the potentiality of the human form. The only thing we can carry with us to our next life is the virtuous of non-virtuous karma we have accumulated. We cannot bring our relatives, friends, or possession. Therefore, it is important to practice Dharma continuously. By depending on Dharma, we can attain the spiritual realizations which will help us in future lives. Our Dharma practice needs sustained effort day by day and year by year. For some people, spiritual realizations may develop quickly, like striking a match. Others may find realizations difficult to achieve. But if we practice, Dharma teachings will become more clear and more relevant to our life. At first, we may be confused by Dharma teachings because they are very profound. Dharma may be different from our habitual ways of thinking. It may seem strange the first time we hear it. However, by contemplating, meditating, and reflecting on Dharma, we can feel that our mind and Dharma have mixed together, that our mind has been absorbed into the Dharma. If a person feels that there is a great distance between his or her mind and Dharma, it is hard to reach realizations. When we feel that our mind and Dharma are mixing or meeting, there is great hope for attaining spiritual realizations. Some people may hear Dharma teachings for many years, but do not achieve realizations because their minds and Dharma have not really mixed. At present, there is a wide gap between our mind and Dharma. What we have to do is to bring our mind and Dharma closer and closer together. After some time, we will feel our mind dissolve into the Dharma. Then we can think more deeply about Dharma and attain realizations.